Welcome to The Rink, your weekly dose of hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian, along with Tom Luongo. This week, Ruutu bites, Pronger smites, and I just can't seem to care about the All-Star game. Plus, we've reached the halfway point of the season. It's time to talk about who's up, who's down, and frankly, who shouldn't be there. That's all coming up on The Rink. The NHL released all of their All-Star game picks for this year, and frankly, I could give a damn. This is the first year that I could care absolutely less about the All-Star game, and last year I tuned in, I watched the replay because I was at work during it, and even though there wasn't a Colorado Avalanche player, I was, you know, happy to watch and all of that. It's, you know, nice celebration, all of that. Oh my God, I do not care one bit this year.
I don't either. I haven't cared about the All-Star game in a while. I think the last time I cared was maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. Even before when 4 or 5 Sabres went to it a couple of years ago, it was only marginally. I still don't think I even watched the game. So yeah, my interest in it has waned as the older I get, the more I spend. The older I get and stuff, the less I find it interesting.
I'm starting to wonder if it's like a certain rite of passage for hockey fans. Like you've arrived at a certain level as hockey fan, at the point, you know, like this is just one of those benchmarks. Oh, you don't care about the All-Star game? Then you're a real hockey fan. You know?
Yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know. I remember being really intrigued by it, you know, during the slug ball years, you know, around the turn of the century or so, when God forbid you actually saw an inch of open ice. And yeah. It was, you know, it was kind of cool. And I remember watching, you know, one or two of them with my wife very early on, it's like 2000, 2001, going, wow. They can actually skate and do really cool things on the ice. And now I'm watching it going, wow, the coaches must be tearing their hair out of their heads watching this stuff.
Well, not only that, I mean, the biggest scoop from last year, and I was amazed because nobody seemed to really pick up on it, was when Rick DiPietro hurt himself in the All-Star game last year. And he said on mic live during the game, I think I hurt myself. And nobody said anything. Nobody said anything on the broadcast. I really didn't see anything blogging wise about it. And he's never recovered. So yep. Really, other than that, there isn't any real news from the All-Star game. And I also want to bring up that skills competition from last year. The obstacle course thing that they did was the worst televised hockey thing I think I have ever seen in my entire life.
Well, ever. I didn't watch it last year, so I can't talk about last year's. But the other ones in the past, I haven't been all that impressed with either. It just I don't know.
So bad.
You know,
I wish you had seen it. It was almost like Versus came up with this whole thing and then didn't do any kind of test run. They didn't even get like little scrub players to run through it so that they could see how it should work on video. They just kind of said, well, this is here's what we're going to do. And by the time the little competition, the first round was over, the cameras were just catching up to what was happening. It was awful to watch. Wow. All of the voting, the fan voting and all of that. How many Montreal Canadiens do we really need in there that actually deserve a starting slot? And then after that, you know, who got snubbed, who didn't? Yeah, it's pretty much meaningless.
The vote for Rory Fitzpatrick campaign pretty much destroyed the whole concept of fan balloting. It's the same thing, but, you know, they've been doing it in baseball for can't tell you how many years now, where every year the friggin' New York Yankees would pack the list because they were the only ones who could sell out a game on Tuesday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so you'd go to the park, and I remember as a kid doing this and just voting for every Yankee that was on the list, and of course they'd all go, and it didn't mean anything, you know. And it's a way to capture the imagination of 10-year-olds, but it's not, you know, it's not hockey, and it's not rewarding the players who are having the best years or anything along those lines. So, I mean, obviously,
I think it's kind of funny how you put it, that it captures the imaginations of 10-year-olds when it's, you know, like 30-year-old internet geeks that were voting for Rory.
But that's the send-up of the entire process and how stupid the concept of vote early, vote often, like this is Chicago politics. Or
exactly.
Something. We're voting for the mayor of Chicago or some shit. I don't know. It's just really funny. So.
I'm sorry. I hate to get off on a downer, but man, I'm over the All-Star game. You know, and look at the and of course, you know, it's gonna rate nothing. There's gonna be nobody's gonna be watching it. Diehard hockey fans, people who watch Versus, are not gonna be watching it. But look at what happened with the Winter Classic this year.
Yeah, I just saw the ratings numbers a couple minutes ago, and it's a 4.4 million people watch the game, which is the most anybody's watched. Most people in the U.S. to watch a hockey game since 1975.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And in 1975, it was, I think they said it was the Rangers versus Flyers, so maybe we'll be seeing that next year for the Winter Classic, just so they can build on it. Hey, it worked in 1975. It'll work here.
Well, I mean, no, I think it's a good idea. I mean, something along those lines, either the Battle of Pennsylvania or, you know, something along those lines. They've got to come up with another good, you know, another good quote-unquote gimmick or whatever to celebrate the game. Because regardless of whether we want it to be, you know, more special than, you know, every year or not, whether we like it or not, with ratings like that, we're going to have one next year. It's just now a question of who's going to be involved and, you know, and how it's going to work out. So I'm happy to see that many people actually tuned into a hockey game. I think it's great. I think it's certainly surpassed any of my expectations for how well the game would draw. But, you know, I was never really into it in the first place because I'm not only am I over the All-Star game, but I still haven't watched one of these outdoor games.
Yeah, yeah. Next year you're going to have to break the cycle. It was entertaining. It almost seemed like 4.4 million people were tuning into the Puck Daddy Sports Blog Nation live blog that was going on over at Puck Daddy. Holy cow, was that thing busy! I was getting ADD trying to watch the game. I couldn't do it anymore.
Well, it's like hosting a live chat for a game. It's really tough to watch the game, host a live chat, and say anything, come up and say anything intelligent to keep the conversation moving. It's really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's, you know, I still wonder about the Winter Classic next year since they are taking the time out to do the Olympics, possibly, of course, for the last time, quote unquote. I always keep saying that. Eric McElhinney was telling me that they had a meeting with the Board of Governors, and they were one of the things on the docket was kind of was the World Cup of hockey, which I attended a couple in 2004, I believe it was, in Minnesota, which I had a great time at. I think that would be I think that's the best place to put the NHL rather than the Olympics. But I don't think I'm not sure if you can really go back anymore to non NHL players in the Olympics.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that you're going to have to. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in that respect. I don't think it's going to be really hard to go back. And frankly, it's hard not to take advantage of the coverage, you know, regardless of whether we as hockey purists or whatever we are or whatever, the Olympics are a good showcase for the sport. It may not be the same as it's not the same game, certainly, as NHL hockey, but it's still a good showcase for the sport. I mean, the outdoor game, the Winter Classic, isn't really NHL hockey either. Mm-hmm. With the amount of defense that was not played on the goals that were scored in that game, it's hard to call that NHL hockey. But at least on most nights,
I don't mind that with the Olympics, though, not being NHL hockey. I don't know. I love to go to minor leagues. I love to go to just about any hockey that's around. But you know, I get away from the structured, overcoached NHL game and see something a little bit different, a little more wide open. It's not going to be as wide open in Vancouver because they are using the NHL sized ice, which I think will tilt the ice in the favor of the Canadian and American teams, you know, rather than the wide open style that the European teams are used to.
Well, I mean, you say wide open. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't saying that I thought it was bad, a bad version of the game. It's just it's a very common complaint that it's not NHL hockey that we're showcasing over in the Olympics. It's just a common complaint. But I don't know. I got to take issue, though. I don't really think that Olympic hockey is usually very wide open. I mean, against some teams,
When I said wide open, what I meant was the bigger ice surface. That's more what I was saying.
Usually, it winds up being a much more defensive game. Everybody plays the German 1-4 if they can't compete, and that's But then again, so does half the NHL. So with the removal of all the red lines, it really doesn't matter about the width of the rink anymore. It's really the removal of the red line that's brought back the 1-4, which I can't stand.
Let me tell you, I was at a bar the other night. I had a German 1-4, and it was excellent. All in favor. Hey, I wanted to talk to you about this. I'm sure that you're going to have a bit to say. Jarkko Ruutu. took a bite out of crime.
Anybody surprised?
He bit a Buffalo Sabres player.
He bit Andrew Peters.
Well, okay, then he didn't bite a player. I mean, I'm kidding.
No, you're right. It's okay. Peters knows his role, and his role is to go out there and
get bit.
Not get bit, actually. That's the interesting part about it. And for all of the sideshow that goes along with a lot of the brawlers or the enforcers or whatever you want to call them in the league, Peters does play a very important role on that team, and he's a very important part of the locker room. And he knows his role, and his role is to go out and agitate and take on, and to remind everybody that if you take too many liberties, that this is what's going to happen to you. And he got into a scrum with Rutu, and apparently he got his, as always, happens in these things. He gets his mitt up in Rutu's face. And somehow
inside his mouth. I mean,
somehow he got it into Rutu's mouth, and Rutu didn't like it, and he bit it.
That's kind of where I kind of go, well, wait a minute, I don't like that this happened, but then again, how's he going to, get your freaking hand out of my mouth? It's not like he could or shut him off very well.
Rutu could back up.
I think he was against the boards at that point.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
That ain't hockey.
No, it's not hockey, but, according to Lindy Ruff, it was, and his take after the next morning, it was really funny. The local Buffalo press was really trying to, build this up into a big story and everything. And the talk radio was completely over the top. I mean, Jeremy White was calling for Rutu to be thrown out of the league, and Mike Robitaille was asking for a minimum 6-game suspension. And I'm like, look, he plays for the Ottawa Senators, and it happened against the Sabre. If he gets suspended at all, it'll be nigh on to a miracle. Mm-hmm. So I was happy. It was 2 games. It was it was reasonable. And Rutu's has a history, and had that been Mike Fisher, that'd have been who doesn't have a suspension history. Nah, there would have been no suspension. I'll bet you dollars to donuts. So, those are Don Koharski sized donuts, mind you.
Have another finger, you fat pig. I wonder how Sherry from Scarlet Ice feels about it, because if you remember in our second episode, I believe it was, that we had her on, we asked her about Rutu, and she said that she didn't like him before, but now, of course, she's on her team, and now she loves him. Of course, the Senators have been in free fall almost as much as the Penguins. We'll get to that in a minute, but I wonder what her take on
the Dallas Star, and or the Dallas Stars, and how much people love Sean Avery or your love for Darcy Tucker. It comes down to a point where you do have to ask yourself, is it worth it to have this guy in our locker room? And a team, like I've always said, a team already sporting Chris Neal, what use do you have for Jarkko Rutu?
He has a taste for human flesh, how that goes. Now he's going to be walking through the streets, brains,
It's going to be really funny. But Lindy Ruff was really funny the next morning at the press conference. Like I said, the local Buffalo press was trying to get, a rise out of him and whatnot. And he was smirking the entire time going, this really isn't that big a deal. It was like, it's not like there wasn't, not like there hasn't, that there's not biting in the NHL. I mean, when I was playing in the 80s, cannibalism was pretty, common in the NHL. And now it just seems to be back. And he was literally trying not to just bust out laughing.
Line up the goons against them at all. So,
he wasn't, exactly. I mean, but again, that was a different, it's an intense rivalry. The two teams don't like each other, regardless of the changes around the periphery. These are the same two teams have really, for the most part, been together now for 4 years. They've played a lot of hockey. There's a lot of water under the bridge. They don't like each other. And,
but it is what it is. They like how they taste. The other suspension is, and I'm going to mispronounce his name, I'm sorry, Grabowski from
Toronto.
From the Toronto Maple Leafs was suspended 3 games for shoving a linesman. Basically, the gist being that he wanted to go. It was a situation that could be broken up, and the linesman basically kept him from fighting. In the end, he shoved the linesman off of him. Kicked at the bench and skated off the ice, which, that it wasn't much of a shove, but it's still, you just don't do it.
No, you don't do it, and it's consistent with how the NHL has handled incidents with the refs all year, so it is what it is. I mean, if Pekka got the number of games he got for whatever it is he did, then obviously they've got to continue to hold the line against even a minor thing like that. He was, it's not only, I don't even think it's the final shove that he gave the referee, the that got him suspended. I think it was all the antics up until that point, really kind of abusing that poor man. There was at one point they, you know, he had to get tackled, and he got back up again, and it was all this other stuff. You know, I feel bad for the kid because obviously at that moment in time, he really wanted to go with Sergei Kostitsyn. And I can tell you that having watched the Montreal Canadiens over the last couple of years, I've wanted to go with Sergei Kostitsyn. So I can understand his frustration, but you know, it's like everything else. You can't really take it out on the linesmen for doing their job. We can debate, obviously, whether or not the linesmen really should be doing that, but they've been instructed to do so. So
it is. Well, you know, I think this is a life lesson that we can all learn something from. When Brad May is trying to settle you down, maybe you should calm down.
Yeah,
maybe you should heed his advice. Dude, you don't want to do this. Oh, okay, Brad.
When Brad May is giving you advice about, you know, about going over the top, you should listen. That's very good. That's a good point.
When a guy from AA, you know, tells you maybe you've had a few too many to drive, you give me your keys, this, you know, okay, I'll.
When Darren McCarty is telling you shouldn't drink anymore, it's time to. Sorry, dude, it was right there.
I dropped it. I'm glad that you said it, not me.
Well, I mean, the Red Wings beat the Sabres this week. I'm entitled. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
We just watched that video also. We'll put a link to it on the website, www.rinkpodcast.com, about Chris Pronger and one of his late game hits on, I believe it was Zach Parise. What was it, about 2 seconds left, 3 seconds left in the game, comes off the bench and elbow
Parise in the head. Yeah. Now, to be fair to Pronger, though I don't think he's in any way, manner, shape, or form blameless or innocent in this incident, Zach Parise is really small. He's really tall, and there's no other way that Pronger couldn't hit him with an elbow. But
right.
It looked to me, I watched the replay, and some people are having. There's obviously varied reaction to this, but looking at it for me, it looked like he jumped over the boards and he had his head up and was looking down ice, and Parise turned into him. And he threw an elbow of what I would call an elbow of opportunity and tried to mask it. I'm not really sure it was a premeditated thing, but it was certainly an elbow of opportunity. And I think it was literally 1.5 seconds left in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, there was going to be contact because Parise, I don't think, realized Pronger was there. He spun around real fast and basically spun into Chris Pronger's arm. And Pronger's not one to say to not take an opportunity when presented. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Well, it's. I know that there was Puck Daddy was talking about why, you know, and how many suspensions he's had, and yet there's been no anger management. And yeah, I don't think this is really suspension worthy. It's just one of those things where, you know, you're away from the play, you're so far from the goal that, you know, maybe he should have watched out a little more carefully. But I think that really is all that.
Well, I'm not trying to absolve him of anything. He could have not followed through with his elbow, on the contact. Parise is not somebody that he's going to be fighting for the Stanley Cup this year. I just don't see the Devils as cup contenders, even with Marty Brodeur. And, you know, maybe Wyshynski, being the good Devils fan that he is trying to make a mountain out of a molehill and hope for something else. But, you know, I don't know. I don't see it as a big deal. But at the same time, nothing, you know, Pronger does is, you know, is nothing Pronger does surprises me. I remember that hit that he put on Dean McCammon that actually got him suspended during the Cup Finals, where they, you know, where they won the Cup a couple of years ago. That was
suspension worthy, absolutely.
Suspension worthy. That was throw the book at him worthy. That was somebody do the right thing and take and break a stick over his head worthy. I'm sorry. And I'm not a violent man, but that was ridiculously over the top.
Well, I've always kind of wondered why the NHL, you know, every time I say it, I think to myself, why does the NHL love Pronger so much? And then I realize, oh yeah, they love him so much because he can play. You know, it'd be one thing if he was just a goon, or, you know, but, you know, he has a gigantic body and he isn't afraid to use it. So
now he learned when Mike Keenan, I think it was Mike Keenan, was tutoring him when he was in, when he came up with Hartford, it was with Hartford, right? Yeah. That He has got to use his big frame in every way. He's got to play mean if he wants to. If he wants to be the dominant player that he's capable of being, which he is, he's got to be mean. He's got to play with that edge. So, you know, he does it. Char does it. Char goes out there and eats babies every night. And whether love him or hate him, Dion Phaneuf does the same thing. And it's part of the reason why they are paid what they're paid and hold the place that they hold.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
No, I agree.
Sometimes they go over the top.
Yeah. Well, sometimes. Right? I think, though, yeah, good point, though. He's got a gigantic frame, and he's going to use it. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And he really is a very close to a generational style, generational player. I mean, he's a very impressive hockey player. Mm-hmm. And just about every phase of the game. So, you know, we're going to be talking about Pronger when he retires, the same way we're going to talk about Chelios and a variety of other people. Mm-hmm. Now, especially now that he has a cup under his belt.
Yeah,
you know, and it's just that simple.
Well, we're at the halfway point of the season, except for of course the Senators, who really, you know, it doesn't matter. They could be at any point in the season. It's not going to matter. They're not going to change.
And the Islanders. Let's talk about them. Let's not just single out Ottawa. Though singling out Ottawa is, for their ineptitude is always welcome in these corners.
But we're halfway through the season and kind of looking back at where we were at the start of the season. The things that stand out to me right now. I remember how the Minnesota Wild got off to such an incredibly hot start, and mm-hmm. everybody thought that this was the team to beat, and then everybody beat the Minnesota Wild, and they're now sitting squarely in 10th place in the West,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, that's not – the West is still tight down low
right.
You know, in those, 6 to 12 – spots are still,
yeah, 6 to 12, or really 7 to 11. Only 4 points separates five teams between 7th and 11th place. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and you know, the teams at the bottom of that list have two games in hand over Phoenix, who's at the top of that list. So, really, for all intents and purposes, you could say that all of those teams have somewhere between 44 and 46 points. And once they've all played 43 games, and you know, it's really those last two playoff spots are anybody's: Phoenix, Colorado, Columbus, Minnesota, Edmonton, yeah. And Nashville's really not out of it either. So,
no, Nashville's not. Blues certainly are.
I think the Blues. Wow. I think we can stick a fork in the Blues. I think we're close to sticking a fork in both Dallas and Los Angeles, though. Obviously, either of them could get hot and vault right up 3 or 4 places in the standings. In the East, conversely, really you have separation between the top 10 and the bottom 5. The Islanders are already in the mode of shopping people. Doug Waite and apparently I think either Mike Comrie or Bill Guerin are already on the block being shopped around. Ottawa should be sellers at this point. They are completely out of it. They are now 15 points behind Carolina and Buffalo for the 7th/8th spot, as would be Atlanta, Tampa, and then Toronto is really the only one with an outside shot to make it into that top 10. But they're 6 points behind the Penguins, who are sinking like a rock.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And look at where the Capitals are. I'm kind of laughing because the Capitals are in second place. The Islanders are in 15th place, and both of them signed a huge long contract with one player, and both of them are working out exactly how everybody thought that the mm-hmm. Islanders were making a huge mistake, that that this is just the most ridiculous thing ever, and where is DiPietro? He's injured. And mm-hmm. Washington Capitals, they're scoring goals. Ovechkin's come, you know, he had a goal scoring slump at the beginning of the year, and
but he's still
sudden,
the best player
bang,
in the game.
Yeah, and he's right up there. Isn't he tied with Vanek for most goals in the NHL right now?
I think they all are somewhere around, yeah, him and Jeff Carter and Vanek are all, I think, somewhere around to right around 27, 28 goals. I know, yeah, Vanek's got 27. I don't know if anybody scored in the last day or so I haven't really looked. But then again, I mean, look at Mike Richards' contract, 12 years, $68 million, and Philadelphia got off to a horrible start.
Yeah.
So look at the teams that got off to a horrible start. Look at a team like Philly that won one out of their first 10 or 12 games. They're now leading the Atlantic Division, which is other than the Islanders, is a complete crapshoot.
Yeah.
If the
Montreal Canadiens weren't looking like much of anything when it first started, everybody said how great they were going to be, and they didn't look like much.
And
of
they've
anything.
Been and they're but they I think and they're I they're think they've had around. Solid I think they've had a solid season so far. I think what's really, you know, come up to hit Montreal is the fact that Boston has come out of, you know, has come out of bubble territory at the beginning of the season to now be one of the dominant teams in the NHL. Boston is a plus 60, 154 goals per 54 against. 7 regulation losses, 66 points, 42 games into the season. It's an amazing. That alone is amazing. It's even better than San Jose, who are only a plus 45. So
well, also, you know, just the Montreal Canadiens, real fast. Also, they're second in goals against, and that's. And that's a goaltending situation that nobody thought was going to be worth crap. That they traded away Huey, but they maybe shouldn't, and could Price carry and all of that stuff. And really, those are solid numbers.
Montreal was so deep in goal that they could do just about anything they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And between Halak and Price, and you know, Price had a good playoff last year. There's no reason to believe that he wouldn't be, you know, solid this year. And they're built really well in front of him. They've got a very solid defense. And so there's no reason to believe that Montreal is not going to be right in the thick of it at the end of the season, whether they win the Northeast or, you know, whether they're still just a solid 4 seed as opposed to a number 1 seed. Well, that's a different story, but I don't think anybody, you know, a lot of people were had Montreal, you know, to come out of the East as a top seed. And really, if you look at Washington, if you look at the top of the Atlantic Division, the top of the Southeast, if you factor out Boston, Montreal has 56 points. They'd be 1 point behind Washington for the lead in the East. Mm-hmm. No one expected Boston to be doing what they're doing. So really, you know, Montreal's pretty much on pace.
Yeah.
As to where the preseason predictions would be, the big wild card, though, the major wild card has been Boston.
Yeah. So. Well, you know what? I think that's...
And that which is fine. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, and flip that on its head. I mean, Boston's kind of taking the place of the Penguins, and we're, right. You know, who are in 10th right now and just failing left and right. Mm-hmm. So far this year, they've been shut out by the Rangers and the Lightning. They were shut out by the Lightning.
Yes.
They lost over this past weekend to the Colorado Avalanche 5-3. And then right before that, they had a really embarrassing loss to the Predators when they were up 3-0 and then wind up losing 5-3.
Yep.
It's just stunning for a
no
team
scoring off the wing. Said it here at the beginning of the year, substitute Marian Hossa for Miroslav Chatan. You take out Eric Christensen and Colby Armstrong.
I even said early on that I think those are the worst losses that they took in that trade.
And Ryan Malone. And you've got Malone who's a big presence off the wing. And while he's not setting the world on fire down in Tampa, but, you know, for all the drama in Tampa, at least they're not in the bottom, and they've pushed themselves up to a solid 12th, and they're the best of the worst in the East at this point, and you know realistically speaking, Tampa's 5-4-1 in their last 10.
Mm-hmm.
Penguins are 2-8.
They're still waiting for Sergei Gonchar to come up, come off injury, and that's that. Who knew? I mean, these are all things that, you know, at first you think, okay, well, they lost Hossa, but they didn't have him before the trade deadline.
Hossa's not an integral part of that team,
right? But at the same time, the two players that they lost for him, I think, were Hossa is good enough that he could really make that gap. You know, he could definitely close off that gap easily by himself. But I think that they're missing those role players, you know, those character players a lot more. And now they're going to miss Fedotenko for 4 to 6 weeks because he broke his hand in a fight.
Yep. And Fedotenko is one of those guys that, you know, was one of those guys that always seems to raise his game in the playoffs. He's a very valuable guy come playoff time. But, you know, you got to make the playoffs to get there.
Yeah.
You know, it was the same thing argument about bringing Jason Smith into Ottawa to stabilize the lower half of the defense. Well, you know, he's great in the playoffs. He's got all this experience and everything else. Yeah, but you got to get there first.
Right.
And if you can't keep the puck out of your own net, then, you know.
Yeah.
Or you can't transition the puck out of your own end to score.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? And Ottawa's, you know, Ottawa's only scored 93 goals. Now, who said that Ottawa was a one-line team at the beginning of the season?
No one. No one did. Well, you did.
I did.
No one else did.
I know no one else did. I said they looked.
Well, they're one-line. And even that one line, that top line, isn't even looking great.
No, because, you know, now they're human.
Yeah.
You know, now the shine is off. Now there's no secondary scoring. Now nobody's afraid of them. Now they have a bad transition game, so these guys actually have to lug the puck up ice.
Mm-hmm.
and do the hard work. They can't score off the rush anymore. They can't they can't hang out. They can't, you know, hang out one foot over the red line, waiting for the great outlet pass, because they don't have anybody back there who can give them the great outlet pass. Hey, you know, talk to me. That's the same problem in Buffalo.
Yeah,
their transition game has gone nowhere because teams are playing differently now. Aside from different scouting and coaching, and everything else, and slightly different systems. You know. The same outlet passes just aren't available anymore. Mm-hmm. And so now you've got to do a lot harder work in the neutral zone. You've got to make shorter give-and-go plays through the neutral zone in order to get the puck in. And then you've got to play chip and chase.
Right.
And, you know, if you're not willing to go to the – and then after that, if you're not willing to go to the middle of the ice, you ain't going to score goals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when's the last time you really saw Danny Heatley get his nose dirty to score a goal? He's willing to get his nose dirty every once in a while, but not on a regular basis. More often than not, he wants the easy 5-on-3 one-timer. He wants the one-timer from the circle, from the face-off circle. You know where he likes to score, and he's good at that, but he's got to be set up for that stuff. You know, you give him those opportunities, and he's going to take them, but if he doesn't get them, you know,
yeah.
Bye.
It might be time again to talk to Sherry and start and just get a little, you know, 5-minute overview on where everything is, but I think we'll have to do it through her tears of sadness. I'm looking at the West right now, and here's, you know, you and I like to talk a lot about goals for, goals against,
right.
And the only team, this is I hadn't realized this before. I mean, the goals have to go somewhere, obviously, and if goals against have to go to somebody. But and looking at the Sharks right now, obviously the Sharks, the Red Wings, and the Blackhawks are gobbling up goals these days, but. From seventh on down, only one team has more goals for than against, and that's the Wild, who, you know,
yeah.
don't
who
score
don't
many and don't give up many. So
right.
that's just interesting to me that the seventh place has a goal differential of minus 14.
Yeah.
That's
impressive. What it means is that these teams are winning a lot of close games and getting blown out on other nights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's generally speaking, so they're, you know, when they lose to teams like Detroit and Chicago and San Jose, they're losing 5-2, 6-1, you know, that kind of thing. And then they're winning 3-2, 4-3, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? See what I mean? And that's how that works out. Or they're, you know, or they're really going to – I can't even look through the numbers, or but, you know, it's that kind of thing. And it's when they lose badly.
Yeah.
You know, and –
Well, that's kind of the state of things, I guess, at the halfway point. I think I kind of want to go out on this note. Matt Sundin, the Sundin Watch, he chose blueberry pancakes, and then he finally decided to eat them against the St. Louis Blues. And kind of ate it against the St. Louis Blues.
Yes, he did.
His penalty led to the game-winning goal for the Blues, right. And then in a 6-4 loss against the Blues, who are squarely in last place in the West. Yes. And then, even though it's really no shame to lose to the San Jose Sharks these days, considering how good they are, he got a goal in the 4-2 loss to San Jose.
Right. Well, he was instrumental in the game. What was interesting about the St. Louis game is that he was instrumental in the game tying goal on the power play. He was there setting up the screen, and then not a minute later, and 4 minutes left in a tied hockey game, he pulls this. It's something I've been watching for years him do, which is he hacked the guy's stick and broke it in half. And this time he finally actually got caught because he wasn't wearing a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey. And he would either, I mean, when he was at the Leafs, it was very common for Mets to take a liberty of some form or another, be it a hold or a shove from behind or a cross check or a hook or a trip or whatever, some little thing. He'd always get away with it and then make some, you know, get the puck and make some brilliant play out front, and Toronto would burn you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but you're wearing a Canucks uniform now, and it doesn't work that way anymore.
Yeah, but he's obviously not in game shape, and that's
part as well. Sure.
Well, it's part of the fun of it, also in a way. For me, I'm not a huge fan of the player coming back at really late in the season. Everybody else has been beaten down, and I think the teams, you know, it's a crapshoot for sure. Sometimes you get a team with Solani, you comes in and he's fine. Sometimes you get a Peter Forsberg who comes in and, you know, he's injured right away, but as Peter Forsberg tends to be sometimes. And Matt Sundin, everybody's been watching him, waiting for him, blah, blah, blah. And he just took so much time off that, I mean, he doesn't quite have a gut like me, but he's sucking wind like I was when I was playing today. So,
well, you know, but as, again, like everything else, as long as Vancouver, you know, you look at it, and Vancouver and Anaheim are both sitting what look like pretty in the fifth and sixth spots in the West, but they've also played already 44 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, they still have to win the same number of games or the same proportion of games as the teams in 7th through 11th in order to ensure that they, you know, you can say they've got those points banked or whatever, but regardless, you know, you've already played three more games than everybody around you. And so, but as long as Vancouver is able to hang together until Luongo comes back and make it all work, then and hang around a playoff spot until Sundin gets into game shape, which, you know, will take another 2 or 3 weeks, and he'll be in game shape as long as he doesn't get hurt. It doesn't take very long. Speaking of players finally deciding to come back, I don't think it was his choice, mind you. But Brendan Shanahan is going to rejoin the Devils where he started. It'll be interesting to see how that actually works.
Yeah,
when he's just going to be there for veteran depth, or they actually expect him to play minutes, or what? Because at the end of the day, Brendan Shanahan, the last four seasons, was only effective 5-on-4, and certainly not in any other capacity than to receive the pass after the power play has been set up. I could not see him as an effective player in any other role, especially on the Devils. Now, I haven't looked at the Devils' power play numbers to see if that's what they really need. Mm-hmm. Let me do that real quick while we're talking about something else.
Well, who would you say is the leadership for the Devils right now? I mean, who's the guy that stands out?
I guess it's supposed to be, you know, you've got Jimmy Langerbrunner, you've got Brian Ralston, you've got Bobby Hulick, you've got Martin Brodeur. Yeah. I mean, you know, who else do you need? I mean, they don't have that on defense, certainly, but, you know.
You have Mike Rupp. Woohoo.
Mike Rupp. But, you know, the Devils' power play is exceedingly average, and their penalty kill is actually not good at all. It's only 81%, which is definitely in the lower half of the league. So,
and certainly for them, even though they're in a halfway, you know, a halfway solid position. I mean, they're 24-15-3. That's not.
Yeah, the Devils are solidly a playoff team at this point. There's no doubt about that. And picking up Shanahan's not going to hurt their locker room any. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm, you know, again, it's almost like you're bringing him back to be a coach for, you know, for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. Because the last 2 years I've watched him with the Rangers, I mean, Shanny was, I don't like to say this, but he was bad 5-on-5. He was somebody you picked on 5-on-5. Yeah. I've been watching teams pick on Tapanen Newman every night all season long because he's 40 years old and he's a step slower than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Sure, he thinks the game faster than other people, but he's still a step slow, and if you pressure him, he's going to make a mistake. And the same thing with Shanahan. If you pressure him in the neutral zone, he's going to make a mistake with the puck, cough it up, make a bad pass, and you can capitalize on that. And he's not fast enough. He doesn't have enough of a step to, you know, help rectify that mistake. He's not only going to cough the puck up, but you're going to be, you know, paying for that mistake while playing 5-on-4 while he loops back into playing.
Right, but Shanahan's not that guy, and he hasn't really been. I don't even finishing off with the his time with the Red Wings. I don't think he was really that guy anymore. But
I couldn't believe he still. I mean, I understand he still wants to play, and don't get me wrong, I don't take anything away from the guy. I mean, obviously the fire to compete is still there, and all of that, but I honestly thought when the Red Wings didn't re-sign him, that he should have, you know. I figured it was the end for him then. And, you know, he had that first, you know, that first half of that first season he was with the Rangers, he was really good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as the season wore along, you could see it was wearing him out. And then when he came back for the second or third season, it was just obvious. This is when he's on the ice 5-on-5, the Rangers have to protect him.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, hey, you know what? If Chris Chelios can still play, if Claude Lemieux can make a comeback, and, you know, even at the AHL level as he is right now, there's still hope for you and I, old men like you and I.
Not me. I remember I can't skate. Tom, only if we're playing field hockey.
Your time may come. We may get that challenge. Tom, thanks a lot.
No problem, James. Anytime, man.
Thank you for listening to The Rink. You can find Tom's work over at nhl.fanhouse.com. You can find my blog at jerseysandhockeylove.com. And the rink is at www.rinkpodcast.com. You can always send us an email at rink@rinkpodcast.com. Or you can call us 24 hours a day at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink.